welcome to Hashtag Black. I feel like this is our second season because we ran our first season while I was at the University of Missouri, and I am now at the University of Massachusetts in Amherst. I'm Stephanie Shonikon, and I enjoy talking to my students about the hashtags that are trending that have to do in some way with Black life. So we are kicking off our second season. I'm really excited to be working with two of my students here at the University of Massachusetts, the W.E.B. Du Bois Department of Afro-American Studies. And I'm thrilled also that we still, I can still tap into the talent back at Mizzou. And so we are also going to have periodically, hopefully, every time we do this show, we will always have a student from Mizzou, and that student will be probably Marshall Allen. But before I go further, and before we jump into our hashtags, I'd like my two panelists to introduce themselves, my two hashtag Black colleagues, and then we will get into the trending hashtag. So, Biko.
Hi, my name is Biko. I am on the Literature and Culture track. I'm also a second year doctoral student in our department.
And hi, I'm Yelena. Everyone calls me Lena. I am also a second year doctoral student, Literature and Culture track.
Marshall Allen, I am a master's student at the University of Missouri studying public policy.
Very good, very good. And for those who don't know, Marshall, his undergrad degree is political science and Black studies. So these three students all are really well-read and really involved in the continual learning of Black history, Black culture, Black literature and expression, as well as how all of that reflects on contemporary issues that we're facing. So let's go on and talk about the first thing that I have on the list that people have been talking about. First thing, Bill Cosby.
There it is.
Bill Cosby, 3 to 10 years. And I know that social media has been sort of blowing up about this. Really interesting conversations about, do we support the man because he's a brother? What do we do with Bill Cosby? So, Biko, you want to start?
Fine. All right. I think last night I had actually commented to some people about some of the things I was seeing on Facebook. I commented and said, you know, all the takes on Bill Cosby are trash that I'm seeing on Facebook. And I saw one particular image of supposed to be like a lynching scene, and it has supposed to be Bill Cosby hanging from a tree, and then the white men in the audience with like Harvey Weinstein and Donald Trump and, you know, all these people that have been in the media lately. And it's just that false comparison and this conversation that we need to have about Black men wanting to get away with the things that white men are doing and what that means. Mm-hmm. And also thinking along the lines of Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill, which is on that list. And so my initial thoughts is just like, okay, he admitted to this. We went through the whole due process. Mm-hmm. We're good. Like, it's settled. Let's move on. He's not the doctor dad, Cliff Huxtable, like that. We need to let that go. Mm-hmm.
And the sweaters, those adorable sweaters you used to wear on The Cosby Show.
Yeah. I'm going to put adorable in air quotes on that one. But no, like, I completely agree. Like, I've seen so many like horrible hot takes about this whole thing. And honestly, I was really surprised with the sentencing, because a couple of days before the sentencing, there were news articles and things coming out saying that he had made a plea deal, and the most he was going to get was 3 years. So when I went into class, came out of class, and there was a 3 to 10 year sentence, I was kind of like, oh. And I think that a lot of the horrible takes about it come from, well, you know, I mean, just general trash opinion, but like also just not really knowing the facts of the case. People were commenting on it, talking about like, well, what do you expect when you go to a married man's hotel room and you're dressed all this and And I'm like, you don't even really know, obviously, what really went down in the case, because the one case that he was actually convicted for, that is not how that happened. And the fact that the woman who had to testify against him had to come out about her sexuality for people to believe her and then, like, conveniently forget about it, like, a couple of years later and still try and vilify her. I was just like, I don't know. I don't, like, Cliff Huxtable didn't even do that much. I don't know. For me as a person, I guess I wasn't on the Cosby Show like that. Like, nothing about Bill Cosby makes me go, I got to protect him at all costs. Mm-hmm. Like, Bill Cosby ain't the hill I'm gonna die on. It's just not. And I don't understand why it is for some people.
Well, I think there was a particular moment when the Cosby Show was seen as the, and then of course he was, I think, one of the first black men on a major television show. I think it's the nostalgia, you know, that people are feeling. So Marshall, how are you feeling about Bill?
Bill Cosby needs to go to jail, right? Like, Dr. Huxtable is a character. He's not a real person. On top of that, if he was, you can send Dr. Huxtable to jail, too, because he should know better. Nevertheless, what I've been finding interesting about the Bill Cosby case is how black women have been having to interact with their intersectionality, both as women and as black people. On the one hand, they're faced with rape culture. They're faced with their bodies not being autonomous or not being owned by them. But on the second hand, they're also faced with the idea of blackness and what it means to be black. So, of course, you have the narrative of Bill Cosby is raping women. Bill Cosby is inappropriately doing stuff towards black women, towards women in general. And then you have the other side, more along the lines of Dick Gregory, who's saying, while it's important that rape culture is, you know, vilified, while it's important that it stop, at the same time, why is it that just before he's about to buy a major newscasting company, all of this stuff comes out? And so I've seen many black women both on social media and in person battle with that idea because their intersections at this particular time are conflicting with one another. Do we believe the narrative of they didn't want him to buy a major broadcasting company, or do we stay angry and mad, you feel me, that we have this man who's supposed to be an icon in the black community taking advantage of women simply because he can, right? And it just speaks to, you know, the whole situation, how these narratives are playing out, both women, black men, and the hoteps, of course, who are going at this different dichotomy of narratives, or this different dichotomy of arguments, seeing as how it's kind of like the same thing when The Color Purple was released, and Farrakhan was talking about this just an attack on black men. Uh-huh. The same thing Yolanda was talking about earlier when it came to Eddie Griffin. Eddie Griffin just dropped a 10-minute interview about how the 70s was a wild time and people had Coke spoons hanging from their neck. That's irrelevant. It doesn't matter if they had Coke spoons hanging from their neck and if everybody decided to take Molly and Quaaludes to release themselves. The fact of the matter is, this man is taking advantage of women and going after women without their consent. Nobody is above reproach. You know what I'm saying? Nobody's above reproach, and nobody should be above reproach. It's the same thing that we see happening now as it happened, you know, 20, 30 years ago when people were believing this is an attack on black men. No, they need to be held accountable for their actions just like everybody else.
Right. I mean, I think Marshall raises some really excellent points. Any responses to that?
I think that, like, kind of what really strikes me about this whole entire process, that there are so few people that the urge to defend him overrides, like, this kind of any other understanding of, like, compassion, empathy, and also just rational, like, logic, and that this isn't the first time that Bill Cosby has been accused of such things, and not even in the past decade, you know what I mean? And, like, it goes back, I think, to the 90s was the first time I think he was accused with something. I think he settled. And so it's like, you have people that are like, why is it just happening now? And it's like, no. It's been happening. And just like, and the vilification of the victims is really what I think I can't really wrap my head around. And it does tie into, I guess, the other hashtag when we were talking about Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas, and also Dr. Ford and the Kavanaugh hearings this week. Just this idea of, as it's as if people genuinely believe that these women, these victims, want notoriety in some way. And it's like, I know for a fact that I, as much as I would like to more to memorialize their names, I still can't think of more than like two or three names of Bill Cosby's like accusers. Mm-hmm. I can't. And so it's like, obviously these women aren't doing it for money, fame, you know, all these other things. But for some odd reason, that is the go-to. It's the go-to excuse. It's the go-to explanation.
Yeah. In fact, the president of the United States, he said that yesterday. He said these women were using it to become famous. And it's interesting that we don't even know really what their names are for the most part.
And I just think this all contributes to a larger culture of general hatred towards women. Just thinking of just the attitude towards accusers of them, just painting them as bitter, angry, wanting to get something out of this. And just thinking of Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas and Dr. Ford and Kavanaugh who and Bill Cosby's accusers, it's the question is, well, why now? Why now with, you know, the Supreme Court nominees? Well, they're about to be appointed to a lifetime appointment. So if I know something that should be shared with the general public, I need to step up. And like, there's never a right time for these accusations. It's always, well, if you keep it to yourself, then why are you waiting so long? Or if you come out and say something, there's never a right time for these victims. And I think that's part of this larger culture of just not wanting to come to terms with the fact that a lot of men in positions of power are using their positions to prey on women.
Right. I think also because of something that Marshall said about the intersectionality of Black women, what you both have said is completely true for all women, but I think there's an additional layer for Black women because I do remember when Mike Tyson was accused and when Tupac was accused, you know, that Black men rallied around those men, right? And Black women, the Black women who stepped forward were, again, vilified. So it's this constant struggle. I think Lena and I can speak to it of, are we going to ride with the feminists and, you know, the white woman, or are we going to ride with our Blackness, you know, our brothers? And that's, I think, a burden that Black women like Anita Hill carry.
Exactly. I completely agree. And I think the Anita Hill case is just, it's a horrible and yet perfect example of that. This idea of people were genuinely being like, you just don't want to see this Black man get ahead. He's going to be on the Supreme Court. How could you do this? And this idea of, do we want somebody on the Supreme Court that does do this, that does believe in these types of things? There should be not a single doubt in anyone's mind upon like confirmation to those types of things. And I, even if we get out of like the Mike Tyson and the, but R. Kelly. Mm-hmm. And it, I mean, like that yeah. name that nobody really wants, we think we've gotten over it, but we really haven't gotten over it.
He's still trying to sell his shows.
And he really is. And he is selling his shows. And that's the part that pisses me off, if we're being really honest. And it's just like, even with visual proof, there's still this tendency of maybe not, like, you don't know what really happened. This is just you trying to bring a Black man down. And it's like, well, how about the degradation that this Black woman has felt at the hands of this Black man? Or any woman has felt at the hands of this Black man. I don't remember if Cosby's accuser, the one that this conviction is based on, I don't remember if she's a woman of color. But
he has a mixed
bag. I don't know. He was, unfortunately. And so I don't know, like we're prioritizing like the possibility of these men's future mm-hmm. over a woman's current, her present, and like the pain and trauma that she may be going through. And yes, of course, like it's not as if Black women are the only ones that aren't believed, but there is a special edge to it when it is a Black woman that ties into some respectability politics and some class dynamics and also some racism and colorism and all these other things that just, it's disgusting, to be quite honest.
And tiring. Okay. So let's move on to another woman. So Biko had brought this up to me, I think, the National Museum of African American History and Culture. There was news, I think, last week, and then Essence Magazine wrote it up in September 26th edition about how there was an outcry from the black community, well, some members of the black community, about the fact that they have a white woman curating the hip-hop exhibit. So as scholars who are thinking about the dissemination, the framing of black culture and black life, right? You all sit in classes with white colleagues who are also pursuing that. How do you all feel about this situation? I know it's touchy. It's a tricky thing, but I think it's worth thinking about, you know, and talking about.
I'm not gonna lie. I was quite surprised by the outcry. Just because
from the black community.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised at the outcry, from various, black people, both, you know, large verified accounts and just regular day to day people, I guess, because being within academia, like, I know museum curation to not be the most diverse place in any of its forms. Yes. And so I never once did it ever cross my mind, like, that the National Museum of African American History and Culture, like, it never occurred to me that they did have only black curators. Like, that was never a possibility in my head. And I guess the question now is kind of a should they versus a, well, what do we do now with it kind of thing. And I don't know if I have an answer. I just know that there were other people within, like, the hip hop industry, black men and black women, that were, like, putting their, like, you know, feet in the ring and being like, no, like, this woman is actually qualified. Mm-hmm. And this woman has done the work in a way that, like, we may never know. And I'm unsure, because I think all of us can speak to the fact that living as a black person, studying blackness and history and literature and culture and curating that are all three very different things. And I consider myself a black woman scholar. I do not believe that I could curate a museum exhibit on the history of black women in the United States. I don't.
I came into this conversation through Twitter, and I was following the conversation. It initially started off as a question, and the question was, were there not any black people that were qualified for this? And it was those blue check, you know, blacktivists that immediately attacked the person that, you know, tweeted this question. And I know when, in particular, Simone Sanders got caught heat for this because she went to bat for her, you know, her friend Timothy. And I like how the conversation turned into, well, you know, we hashtag Oscars so white, or Oscars too white, but then the museums are too black. And it's a conversation about how black people have bought into this idea of diversity, but the other institutions, they're not really into it as much, or they aren't, you know, utilizing it to the extent that we would like, where we can tell our stories. And so we have this black museum, this black space, and black people can't even get in the building to tell our stories. And there are plenty of, you know, hip hop curators at, like, Harvard that are black and that are doing the work. And people are just like, well, are there no black people? Could we not have at least a conversation about a black person telling the story of hip hop? Because I know that the narrative of hip hop and, you know, white artists and cultural appropriation is a huge component of that. And just not having or being attacked for posing a simple question was a huge problem with that debate. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's a good question, right? And I know in our program, I've not met all the graduate students, but I think of all the graduate students I've met so far, there's only one who seems to be doing some, yeah.
Does some type of museum curation or something, yeah.
Exactly. So to your point, Lena, about, you know, there aren't that many of us that are being trained for it,
yeah,
right?
I guess, like,
there is something productive about the conversation, having it with the Museum of African American History and Culture. But in my mind, what is more productive is looking at these museum studies departments and being like, are you diverse? Because you're telling diverse stories, whether you like it or not. And so, if the majority of, I don't want to say certified, because I don't know if there's a certification process, but the majority of degreed museum curators that are out there are not of color, like, I understand that there is a disparity. And so it's like, I agree, there probably was someone that was qualified. We don't know if they were interested. We don't know if, like, you know what I mean? Like, if they are, because there are, I know, like, you're talking about, like, the curators that are at, like, Harvard and also, like, at, like, let's say the Schomburg and all these other research centers. Some of them don't want to be in a big, huge government-funded and government-led and, like, institution like that. And so it's also this question of, can you demand Black bodies be where you want them to be because you want them to use their skills?
I totally agree with Yelena on that. But I also feel like, yeah, let's make the demands, but let's have, like, two trains, two things going. Let's make the demands and then, you know, question the museum programs and make sure Black people are getting into these programs, Black people are coming out to be able to tell our stories and have these qualifications. So, like, let's always make the demands, but let's also, to you know, let's also try to quell or try to stop what's the problem that's being created. And so, like, let's do two things at once and not just focus on, you know, where are the Black people? And then, you know, what about the museum studies programs? Like, they're not getting, you know, Black people in these programs. So we need that. And so we got to do both.
But then also, like, and this is just because at my last school, there were a lot of joint programs with museum studies, history, museum studies. It made sense. And I know there were students there, particularly, I don't want to name a particular student, but there was a student there who's Black and was catching flack because the curation they wanted to do was not Black people based. Like, we can't demand, you know, like, that's kind of my thing. Like, even if we up the numbers within museum curation of diverse people, we also can't demand that they do the work that we want them to do. And that, I think, is kind of the issue of this kind of economy of diversity. We want diversity where we want diversity. And we almost want to take, like, the idea of free will out of that. We kind of are like, no. These are the spaces where it needs to exist.
And this is the story you must always tell.
Exactly. And I don't know.
Back against that a bit. So Biko is talking about two tracks. It seems like three tracks, you know, like, and I also want to just add a little thread about Timothy Ann Burnside herself as a curator. All the things I've read about her are tell me that she knows what she's doing, right? Yes, she is a white woman in that space, but she's actually doing really incredible work. She actually started collecting things 2 years before the museum started, right? So, and I don't know if anybody else was doing that. I also want to mention that my favorite book on hip hop is by a guy called Jeff Chang, who is not Black. So there is, I think, a space for, and I think it's an important space, because we can't keep, I don't think change happens if we're the only ones doing the work, right? So I don't know. I think it's interesting. We should keep watching it. Last hashtag for the day. Let's do Cardi B and Nicki Minaj, this explosive moment that we're in, where these two women who are both giants in hip hop, speaking of hip hop history, have really had a very public falling out. How do you think that impacts women of color, women in hip hop? Are you team Nicki or team Cardi B? How are you feeling about that? Let me start with Biko.
I would say for now I'm team Cardi, but
why?
I just like her brand. She came out of the bat saying, I'm from the Bronx. This is who I am. I'm real about this. I'm not going to change just because I have $1 million. And she has maintained that. Also, just reading Cardi B's response to the falling out and just the narrative of Nicki stopping bags and, you know, threatening people from working with her. And as far as respectability goes, I'm thinking of, you know, people, you know, wanting Tiffany Haddish and Cardi B to tone down and to present a certain politeness, a certain femininity in the public space because they are embarrassed. But they are who they are. They got to where they are because of, you know, their characters and who they are. And so just let them be, and let's move away from the respectability and, like, policing Black women and all of that. But definitely I'm with Cardi on this. When Nicki Minaj did come out, you know, back when I was an undergrad, I was all about it. But just, like, the toxicity mm-hmm. that is starting to come out, mm-hmm. and I don't know what she's dealing with, what insecurities, what inadequacies that Cardi B is making her feel, but it would be great. And I feel like it's always this conversation with black rapper, black female rappers, where they have to have solidarity, where they can't beef, where they always have. And then on the other side of that is what people are saying about Nicki Minaj's raps and saying that she needs to, you know, articulate or show people that she's growing and stop rapping about her, you know, her female body parts and rap about something else. Yes. And so I think that it's a bigger conversation than just what's going on with those two, for sure.
No, I'm team Cardi as well. Just because, like, I agree, like, it's kind of this idea of not everybody can be lying. If 10 people tell me that, like, you are not the best person to work with, be around, and everything like that, even if 8 of them are known pathological liars, them last two, you know what I mean? And I also, like, whether Nicki did or did not mention Cardi's child, like, to me, once you bring in the children, it's really all over. And also, Cardi is true about who she is. If she says on site, it don't matter if on site is at Fashion Week. Mm-hmm. It don't matter if on site is over your favorite brunch spot, like in a glass of mimosas. Like, you know, you're gonna have a fight, and it's gonna be a thing. And I don't know, like, also, like, just the idea of, like, oh, they can't be acting like this in front of all these white people. I'm like, again, respectability. I'm not here for it. And, like, just, we don't know what these people are doing. And, like, you know, not to be, like, too vulgar, but everybody talks about the drug use and all this other stuff. And I'm like, a fight is the least of my concerns at Fashion Week, honestly.
Really, really. All right. Okay. So we'll keep watching that and see what happens. We will be wrapping up now. We're really sorry that we lost Marshall as he was on the road. We'll work out the kinks, and we'll make sure that we have a better connection next time. So thanks for joining us for Hashtag Black. We will chat with you all next time.
Bye.
Bye.